Welcome to season 6 of the Retail Tea Break podcast. My name is Melissa Moore, the retail advisor and Rethink Retail's top retail expert for 2024. Each week, I'll be joined by industry experts, retailers and brands to dispel the myths, share knowledge and give you an insight into the retail industry. You can listen back to previous Retail Tea Break podcast episodes on your favourite podcast platform or, of course, on YouTube. And while you're there, please do subscribe to the podcast so that you get to listen to it first every week. So in the meantime, grab that cup of tea, sit back and listen in to season 6 of the Retail Tea Break podcast. Today, I'm joined by a guest who really understands frontline retail. Following in the footsteps of his father and his grandfather, he was brought up around retailers and merchants. Launching his career at 21, he established himself as a district manager. He rose then to become regional director by 25. By 35, he was director of stores, later ascending to the role of VP of stores for Urban Outfitters at the ripe old age of just 38, running operations in the US and Canada. Since then, he's also served as VP of Stores and Operations at Pacific Somewhere, as well as most recently running stores internationally in Canada for Old Navy. Today's guest continues to embody his passion for coaching, mentoring, and leading the next generation of retail stars with his new venture, which we're going to talk about today. Brian Leibrock, author of The Retail Leaders Roadmap, welcome to the Retail Tea Break podcast.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
So am I, and I'm thrilled that you could take time out. I know the book has recently launched out on March 12th, and I'm so interested in the content because I think as someone that's come from frontline retail just like you, a book like this would have been so useful over those years. So before we kick off, in the age-old tradition of the Retail Tea Break podcast, in the time that it takes to boil a kettle, which I'm told is about 2 minutes, tell us a bit about you and a little bit more about your retail background.
Sure. Well, you kind of gave a little bit of an overview in terms of the years and the ages that I was at in different roles. I like to say that as early as I was able to sit at the dining room table, I was listening to conversations about retail. You know, my father was a VP of planning and allocation, corner office, 80th floor of the Empire State Building. So that the inspiration for me was there from an early age. And, you know, I started out working at age 13, Sbarro's Pizzeria, paying taxes when I wasn't supposed to. Working 25 hours a week in middle school because my father wouldn't pay for my Nike Air Jordans. So, you know, you have to figure out a way to do it. So that's what I did. And the rest was history. You know, the rest was just continue to do the work. My father always said to outwork folks, which is the first practice in the book that we'll talk about, but you never let anybody else outwork you. And if you do that, you'll find yourself in a pretty good position day in and day out. And for the last 35 years or so, 38 years, that's what I've been doing.
Amazing. What a work ethos. But by the sounds of it, then, like you've always known retail, but also you've always obviously known the customers and understood those very traditional values that actually fundamentally, that's exactly what retail's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have, you know, I grew up ADHD, non-diagnosed, non-medicated. I think some people tried to diagnose me a couple different times, but we didn't listen. But instant gratification, you know, I always want what I want when I want it. And so retail is an opportunity for folks like myself, whether you have ADHD or not. But most folks that I come across that work retail need immediate gratification. I've learned how to be patient, but I work really hard and fast at being patient, if that makes sense. But I think it's important to understand that retail has, you know, retail is a great profession for folks and can put really good quality food on the table for tons of people.
Oh, I echo that. It's, you know, you've had an amazing career out of it. I've had an amazing career out of it. Not that either of us are going anywhere anytime soon, but it is. And it's really good that people are starting to talk about it as a career, not just a little stopgap, you know, when you're at college or university, that it can really kind of nurture you and help you and the people around you grow, you know, as you develop on. So you've obviously taken all this knowledge and all this kind of time and your experience within the retail setting, and you've put it in this brand new book, The Retail Leaders Roadmap. So why take everything, I suppose, in your head, Brian, and pop it into this book? It can't have been an easy journey. Why do it?
Well, I like to say, you know, it's 11 months of pen to paper and 35 years of blood, sweat, and tears, right? So I was lucky enough to know the path. You know, my father was a VP. You know, I was on the train Metro North into New York City with other retailers that worked with my father. And so I knew the path. I knew what I had to do. Not everybody does. And I would say the majority of people don't. So I wanted to be able to speak to the masses. I've worked for really three major organizations in my career, and I've been able to help folks within those organizations. But I want to be able to help the millions of people across the world, regardless of what country they live in, whether they work retail or not. But retail is definitely my niche. But anybody who wants to have a path, figure out what the path is to success, how to get unstuck. I talk about how to write or rewrite. I think it's more about rewriting your career outcomes. So for me, it was about how do I offer that? And this was the broadest way that I could find to do that. Start with a book, eventually grow it into a podcast, and create content to support.
Fantastic. And it was so good of you then again to use your knowledge, this incredible expertise to help others. Because I love the way when we chatted before that you were saying that, look, obviously in your day-to-day role, you help the people immediately around you. You can help those within the company. But now you've kind of broken down those boundaries, those commercial barriers, and you get to talk to the masses.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if you talk to people that I've worked for in the past, I'm a people person. I think anybody that's worked for me will tell you that I put people first. A lot of my supervisors always thought I was an operator. And the reason is because I can operationalize things and I can make it to where it's translatable for people. And I learned that early in my career where initially I was setting examples of what to do, but I didn't know how to articulate it. And so if people followed me, as long as they were with me, they were successful. But when I wasn't there, they weren't. And so I had to learn how to articulate how to do the job so that when I wasn't around, they could be hugely successful and more successful than I would be. And so that was the beginning stages. And that was, I started doing that back in my early 20s so that I could articulate things. So it helped me be a people person, focus on people, but also be an operational individual, which obviously helped me in my career as well.
Absolutely. So you're making money for the company at the same time that you're supporting the people around you. But also, I suppose, and there's that word in that title, and I can hear it in you with the way you're describing things there. You're a leader. Do you know what I mean? This isn't just about working in retail, which is amazing, but actually you're helping people grow. You're being a leader. And I suppose to kind of to mark that then, this book has three pillars that you've devised, which I actually think would be great rules for anyone's career, regardless of whether they're in retail. So the first one then, build your character. The second one then, build your connection. And then you round it off then with build your plan. So tell us a little bit about those three pillars.
Yeah, thanks for that. So three pillars with practices underneath. We refer to them as practices because they're ongoing. They're never going to go away. If you have a new role, you're going to start over again. If you have a new job, a new company, you're going to go through these practices all over again. But build your character, I liken it to those first couple of years of school. Your freshman, sophomore year, it really is about the fundamentals that you have to take. You may not want to, but you have to because it is what will keep you up when the storms come through. Build your connections is more the electives or the things that you need to really lean into to be successful leading people. You could have an amazing character and do amazing things with your career, but if you're going to lead people, you need connections. You need to understand other people's involvement in your career. And so that's what that pillar is really about. And then the final pillar, build your plan, is really about how you, I refer to it as two things. You have to earn to learn. So you have to deliver. If you don't deliver, you won't have a job. So it talks a lot about how you actually should, the work that you should do that will help you deliver the day job. And when you deliver the day job, you have time to learn because you can make mistakes. People allow you to make mistakes if you are earning and doing well. When you're struggling, they tend to think your mistakes are the reason why, and they don't let you make mistakes. And so you really have to learn how to earn first, and then you have the space to learn. And so that last pillar is really about how you do that.
Gosh, I love that because again, you're still talking about being commercial here. So we're still obviously making the retailer money. You're still hitting your targets and achieving them. But actually, you're almost becoming a more rounded person because the build your connection thing, look, I wish I knew. Everyone that listens to this podcast knows I've been in the industry a little less time than you, about 25 years. And I wish back then that there was such kind of emphasis put on building your connection, seeking out people, whether it's in your organization or in the wider retail arena, that could support you, that you could learn from, that you could watch, you could read what they've written, you could be inspired by them. And that definitely hasn't been the case. So I love the way actually this is really kind of fundamental to what you talk about in the book is building those connections, as part of becoming a better retail leader. But as well as you say with that, you're having to work on yourself and build your character. But but the big one, you got to keep making the money. You got to keep hitting those KPIs, whatever they might be, so that actually you have room for growth. So I think it's great to know that you're not just saying, look, let's mind all the people around you and yourself. You've still got to deliver at the end of the day. You're still a retailer.
You do. And the thing, the reason why it flows the way that it flows, and we played around with it a couple different times to make sure that it really fit the way that we needed it to. Building your character is where you earn your reputation. It really is the work where all of a sudden you have a reputation. Other people see you a certain way because of the work that you've done. And so when you start to build connections, you now have a reputation. So you have to start there. If you lack the character necessary, you lack the reputation, your connections won't be what they need to be. And then I really lean into the conversation of, other people are a part of your success now when you talk about connections, but you're still not in control, but you have a circle of influence, if you will, to be able to control your communication, control your influencing skills. So although you can't control other people's outcomes or other people's actions, what I spend a lot of time on is taking control of what you can control. And do the very best that you can to both communicate in a way that other people will hear you the way you need them to, and influence people in the way that you need them to be influenced by you.
And I think that's important in this day and age because at retail, none of us are fully in control of what happens, either, stock not arriving or the weather changing or commercial kind of objectives that have been set on high. But if you can, as you say, if you can mind things you are in control of and better yourself and therefore better the people around you, sure, it has to be win-win for everyone. So I love that idea that you're on a journey there as well. You don't just come to the end of this and get 10 out of 10, that it's constant evolving. And I suppose, as you said as well, as you go up that ladder in retail or in your career, you're almost starting again. And then you go again and again. It's really evolving and making you that better person that you can be, and enabling you to succeed. But with that, and I hate to always kind of push the negative, but over the years, are there any mistakes then that you've made that maybe have made it into the book that maybe you want to share with us today? How have you learned from those mistakes over the years?
I mean, I've made every mistake known to man. And I would say early in my career is when I made the majority of them, but I'm sure I'm still making them today. I mean, I talk in the book about, I made long distance phone calls on the company dialer when I was like 18 years old and got written up for that. God forbid I worked weekends when I first became a store manager at age 18. I had an ID and I was living in Newport Beach, California. So the last thing I wanted to do was work a Friday night. So I learned through making silly mistakes. I forwarded messages that or replied all to messages that I shouldn't have, that content went out that we had to pull back. So one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book is because I also, I want to make sure folks know like it's okay. Like it's okay. And so I talk a lot about my failures and my mistakes. I was demoted, not demoted, I was let go for performance at age 30. And although whether I agreed that I should have been let go or not, it's neither here nor there, I had to accept that reality, embrace it, and had to do good work after that. And it wasn't for anything other than the fact that I just kind of stopped learning and I took myself too seriously and my ego got in the way. And there were things that I could have done better and in hindsight should have done better, specifically around merchandising fast fashion, which was not an area of love for me. But yeah, I mean, I've made, hundreds of mistakes. I've touched the hot stove over and over and over again because it's, I'm a glutton for punishment. But now I want to offer as much of that to others and share that with others so that others can maybe choose to touch, one or two less hot stoves themselves.
But also, I think there's a really good learning there that you've made the mistakes, but you still look how incredibly successful you've been. But also, you've made the mistakes, and more importantly, you've learned from them. Because again, God, I probably could sit here all day and tell you about the ones I've made over the years. But it's when you stop and are humble, and the ego has to disappear, that you realize there are huge learnings in it that actually make you a better retailer, long term.
Well, and I think, Melissa, what I've noticed too, and I talk about, I just use the math to kind of help articulate it, but what I've observed over the years is 8 out of 10 leaders just don't have the bandwidth for you, whether it be they don't have the bandwidth, their scope is too big, they don't have the skill set, and in some cases, they don't care because they take themselves too seriously. That means two people that you work for out of the 10 that you work for actually care about you first. And I was lucky enough to work for a few of those people, and they helped me tremendously. I refer to one of them, his name is Dave Temple, and I refer to him, I joke and say, he smacked me in the back of the head and got me on the straight and narrow. And he did. Like, I didn't work weekends. And then all of a sudden, when he realized that, he made sure I started to work weekends and made me work pretty much every weekend until I understood what I needed to do. But he was a leader that took the effort and made the effort to be direct with me, gave me the feedback that I needed in the way that I needed to hear it. And I course corrected. So I want to be able to do that for as many people as I can as well. Get whether it's me actually giving them the feedback or this book gives them the feedback, because the book is very direct in what it is that's necessary to be successful, because there's just too many leaders out there today that either don't put forth the effort or just don't know how to.
Then do you think that's almost damaging the industry? Because at the end of the day, we are still shopping in person more than we are online. That's a given. There's plenty of research out there to back that up, especially in these latter COVID years. The more we get away from March 2020. So, we're a people industry. You talked about it there at the beginning. You could see people around you at your father's company, even that, were like that. You watch them and how they worked. But if we're a people company and yet 8 out of 10 of our leaders, the people above us, aren't people because their head's in a book or a spreadsheet or they're more worried about the logistics of something coming in, what does that say about our industry? And do you think maybe that's part of the issue? Is that yes, we all have very busy day lives and we have KPIs that we have to meet and there are all sorts of stuff that we need to be getting on with. But if we can't communicate properly with the people around us, our teams, if we can't help them grow, yeah, no wonder the industry is going through this turbulent time with recruitment and retention at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's because, we're getting 70% of what people have to offer. When people are engaged emotionally, like committed emotionally, they love their boss, they love their company. And it's usually they love the people that they work with. You're getting 100% of what they have to offer. And when you don't, they may still break a sweat and work really hard, but you're not getting 100%. You're getting 70% at best. And so when we have companies that are going under, going bankrupt, or every single January announcing another cut, it's because they don't have best in class people, or they have best in class people that aren't delivering 100%. And so we need to engage folks in a way to get them back to delivering at that rate. And I talk about I was lucky enough to come up in retail when human resources was about people and not about risk management and compensation. When we had, and some still are, by the way, don't quote that in me saying that all HR representatives are, but human resources for most companies today focus more on risk, protecting the company, than they do just people development. And then leadership and development, when I came up, we had a huge leadership and development team at PacSun, and I learned a ton from that group, and they supported the field. It doesn't exist. You can count however many L&D folks on one hand in an organization, and whether the organization is 1,000 stores. So the generalists, or the leaders are really left to do a lot, and they don't have the support maybe or the skill sets, like I said, to be able to keep up in the way that they used to. So if we could lean in there and engage people that way, I think companies would be a lot more successful today.
I completely agree. And certainly with the work I do, whether it's, training or having them on educational programs as they do, you can see the good retailers. And I suppose I say that in air quotes, you can see the retailers that really believe and will really invest in their people, the ones that want them to progress, they want them to learn, as opposed to the retailers that just think, what I do is fine. We don't need any future proofing or any further education or training. Which is really damaging because at the end of the day, as I say, your people are your customers. You have to keep your people happy. You keep them happy, you have very happy customers because our customers can see through it. They can see when people have been landed on the shop floor on day one without an induction, when they haven't a clue what's going on, when they're not supported by their management team. You can feel it when you walk into physical retail, especially. And I think that really kind of speaks to what you're saying there, that we have to mind our people first.
Well, and relationships require at least two people, right? And so the organization is one side of the relationship, or the boss, and then the employee is the other side. And I want employees to take greater ownership and give 100% and stop giving 70% just because their bosses or organization isn't what they need to be. And then I want organizations to recognize that they're only getting 70% because of what they're doing. And so how do we help both parties in the relationship be more productive? And how do we get individuals to be more owners of themselves and their owners of, branding themselves and making themselves successful? And how do we get organizations to do a better job engaging? If we can figure out how to do those two things simultaneously, then we'll start to see, I think, the economy and retail get a little bit stronger.
Yeah, definitely. And well worth doing when we get there. But I suppose the one thing I have to ask, because I know there will be people listening thinking, Melissa, It's all well and good minding our people, but when we're stretched because recruitment is tight or there aren't enough people around, there's still plenty of jobs to be done. There's loads of tasking to be done. How do we put the people first if actually we've just got to get our heads down and the task has to come first?
Yeah, well, it all comes down to prioritization. And I was having a conversation, a coaching session with somebody not that long ago, and they were struggling. And there's a DM at 10 or 11, actually 12 stores. I'm walking to every store and I'm not seeing what I want to see. And no store is getting, it's during holiday, no store looks good. And I said, okay, so what are you prioritizing? I said, well, what do you mean? I said, are you just trying to get everything done the company's asking you to do? And he said, yes. And I said, well, that's why you're struggling. So what do you mean? I said, they're asking you to do too much. What they're asking you to do is unachievable with the team that you have. But if you prioritize, whether it be front of store or denim or whatever you want to make important, you can probably get that done at an A level. And so I think because there's so much on everybody's plates today, regardless of the field or if you're leading buying or allocation, whatever, you have to prioritize. If you can't get to everything, what's the most important thing to get to? And if you do that, you're likely going to deliver pretty darn good performances and eventually earn the payroll or earn the resources, the headcount to be able to get to everything. But I do believe, one, companies aren't going to tell you to prioritize because they want you to get to everything. But as a leader, you have to help people prioritize what's most important and teach them how you're doing it so that when you're not there, they know how to. And people need to be prioritized first above product. Product is a close second because people are the engine that's going to put the product in the consumer's hand, whether it's somebody managing a website or somebody, ringing you up. The individual has to come before the product because the product's already been created at the time that the people are getting involved.
That makes real common sense as well. And especially when, and you know what it's like when it is so busy, when it's peak season, when it's holiday season, where you can't see the wood for the trees because everything needs to happen right now, that actually you do just, stay focused and say prioritize. And of course, then the people around you start to, you have real clarity of the people on the shop floor then as well, because they believe that you have a plan and they will follow you into it. So no, I completely agree. So look, Brian, last question then. And I know obviously, as we've said, the book's coming out, the Retail Leaders Roadmap, it'll be out by the time this episode goes out, which is so exciting. But what else is coming up for you over the next 6 months?
Yeah, so the book launch March 12th. I'm going to be at Shop Talk in Las Vegas, March 17th to the 20th for a book signing with Rethink Retail. So looking forward to that. I'm in the process of putting together my own podcast that I will host called The Retail Well-Wisher Growth Unleashed. And my goal there is to interact with folks that lead those frontline folks that are responsible, whether it be district managers, regional directors, VPs, CEOs, COOs, folks that have a role in how the frontline shows up and what they do day in and day out and what they look for to help folks that are in frontline positions know what to do. Again, this idea of this roadmap. Continue to add content to the website, theretailleadersroadmap.com, so that we can actually give content. I like to talk about, it's one thing to light the fire for folks. It's another thing to sustain the fire. And you have to deliver content, things that people can use so that they can get the work done. So I'll continue to be working on that. And then my wife, she's launching her book in a couple of months. So I'll be supporting her, Melissa LeBrock. And we also own a company called the Well Wisher Company. And she supports the her Well Wisher side of that business, which is all things related to her mental and physical fitness, for example. She's going to support trauma. She's a breast cancer survivor. So she's going to be leaning into that. So there's a lot of fire going on right now that we're going to keep lit.
It's going to be a really busy year, Ryan. I'm so excited for you, for the book, for your wife's book. A lot of good stuff. And we've spoken a few times now. A lot of good energy coming. So I've no doubt you're going to reach an awful lot of people and help them as well. So well done you. But look,
Thank
if
you.
you've enjoyed today's podcast episode, please do like and share it. Remember, you can also listen back to past Retail Tea Break episodes on your favorite podcast platform or, of course, on YouTube. Connect with myself and Brian over on LinkedIn. Obviously, check out the book. I'm going to pop the link to be able to buy the book, the link to his website, all of those things in the show notes. And remember, you'll be able to find the show notes and the transcript for today's episode on theretailadvisor.ie. Brian, thank you so much for your time today. Really loved this chat.
Thank you, Melissa. Look forward to more of them.